You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you. Good afternoon. From the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB, this is Don Guerra.
And I'm Erin Wagermiller. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, October 17th, 2017.
These are really not intended to serve the outdoor recreating public that's come to, you know, hike and go to the beach and so forth. They're intended to make money for the private developer.
Plans to renovate the Indiana Dunes State Park Pavilion include expanding the footprint of the historic structure. As WFHB correspondent Alex Davis reports, developers are reportedly using federal dollars from environmental agencies to add a bar and a convention center. That story is coming up later in the broadcast.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Caregiver University teaches caregivers techniques to deal with the physical and emotional stressors in their and their patients' lives. That story is coming up on Everyday People, a weekly segment aimed at improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County. But first, these local headlines. Duke Energy is releasing records of its Indiana coal ash ponds after being threatened by legal actions from environmental groups. According to a statement issued by Wabash Riverkeeper, the Waterkeeper Alliance and the Hoosier Environmental Council, the dump sites contain hazardous amounts of chemicals that can cause brain damage and cancer. Duke Energy previously refused requests to release the information. The coal ash pond records were reportedly released only after Earth Justice, a nonprofit environmental law firm representing the three environmental groups, threatened to take the energy company to court. Peter Harrison, a staff attorney with the Waterkeeper Alliance, says these coal ash ponds are a disaster waiting to happen.
These facilities where Duke Energy and other utilities tend to store their toxic waste are really just holes in the ground. So this is millions and millions of tons of toxic industrial waste, the coal ash from these old coal-fired power plants, sitting in pits held back only by dams made of dirt.
Coal ash ponds serve as disposal areas for the byproducts of coal-burning plants. Leaks from ponds have caused environmental incidents across the country and have resulted in several lawsuits.
Most notable is probably the 2008 spill in Kingston, Tennessee, where more than a billion gallons of sludge cascaded out of an 84-acre coal ash pond that's really very similar to the ponds we see across Indiana. And that spill buried houses and up to 6 feet of coal ash.
The records for the Indiana sites include maps and details of over a dozen different ash ponds across four counties, Vigo, Gibson, Floyd, and Vermilion. Indiana is home to over 80 coal ash ponds.
The U.S. Forest Service will be conducting controlled burns in Hoosier National Forest. According to a press release issued this afternoon, the burns will take place in Perry, Crawford, Orange, and Brown counties. Forest Service staff say wetter and windless conditions will determine when they set the blazes. Brown County is expected to receive two burns, totaling up to 222 acres of mixed grass and woodlands near Spurgeon's Corner. Perry County is expected to have over 2,000 acres burned. The Forest Service says the burns will close areas of Hoosier National Forest up to several days after the burns are lit. Hoosier National Forest staff were unavailable for comment.
Democratic Party contenders for Indiana's 9th Congressional District have released the results of the first quarter of fundraising efforts. Democrats Dan Cannon, Liz Watson, and Rob Chatlos are contending for Republican incumbent Congressman Trey Hollingsworth's seat. Primary elections will take place on May 8th of 2018, with the victor facing Hollingsworth during the 2018 midterm elections in November. In their first quarter of fundraising, Cannon's campaign announced they had raised over $208,000. Watson raised over $200,000, and Chatlow's reported raising less than $5,000. Hollingsworth assumed office in Indiana's 9th District in January of this year, after moving to the state in September of 2015 and announcing his candidacy the next month. He's been criticized as a carpetbagger, a political opportunist with no local ties to the community he represents, by Republican and Democratic candidates in the past. This morning, the Lawrence County Commissioners decided to discontinue their syringe service program. The program, which is administered by the Bloomington-based Indiana Recovery Alliance, offers clean needles and harm reduction treatments to those living with opioid addiction. Chris Abert, founder and director of the Indiana Recovery Alliance, says he asked volunteers and supporters to show up to the county commissioners' meeting in Bedford. In a press release issued earlier today, the Indiana Recovery Alliance stated there was an overwhelming show of support for the program from the community, including testimony from drug users, families of drug users, multiple respected physicians, judges, community members, researchers, and politicians. The press release stated that only one person publicly spoke against the continuation of the Indiana Recovery Alliance's syringe program, local prosecutor Michelle Woodward. Lawrence County Commissioner Rodney Fish also spoke against the continuation of the program, reportedly quoting the Old Testament. The Indiana Recovery Alliance favors a research-based approach and frequently cites scientific studies on the efficacy of syringe exchange programs, which the Centers for Disease Control have called a best practice approach to combating the HIV and hepatitis C outbreak. In the last year, the Indiana Recovery Alliance has reportedly reversed 50 overdoses. According to the Indiana State Department of Health, the rate of hepatitis C in Lawrence County the year before the program began was 188 cases per 100,000. The latest data suggests that number has been halved since the IRA's program began. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Erin Wagermiller. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
The Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore is perhaps the most widely known landmark in the state. The 15-mile string of sand dunes and marshes along the southern tip of Lake Michigan are an environmentally protected area and comprise the fourth most plant-diverse ecosystem in the country. At the center of the 15,000-acre park is the aging State Park Pavilion. As WFHB correspondent Alex Davis reports, a controversial decision to renovate the pavilion to include a rooftop bar and convention center is using federal funds to increase the structure's footprint.
Two environmental watchdogs filed a complaint to the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation late last month. The complaint, filed by Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, or PEER, and Dunes Action, states that the Indiana Department of Natural Resources and the Natural Park Service are approving inappropriate modifications to the pavilion pier in the Indiana Dunes State Park. The proposed remodel of the historic pier would include terraces, balconies, and a rooftop bar added to the Indiana Dunes State Park Pavilion. Senior counsel for PEER, Paula Dinnerstein, says appropriate steps are not being followed by the DNR and National Park Service.
Our organization, PEER, which is Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, we work with current and former employees of the government, federal, state, and even local, who have environmental concerns about things that are going on in their jobs or in programs they formerly worked in, and we try to help them expose and address these issues. And in this case, we were contacted by a former employee of the National Park Service.
Norm Helmers is a retired former National Park Service employee. Helmers had a 32-year career with the National Park Service, but is now part of Dunes Action.
September 28th, the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, and our organization, Dunes Action, submitted a letter to the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation in Washington, D.C., saying that the project has not received what is called a Section 106 approval.
Section 106 is a section of the National Historic Preservation Act. It states that certain requirements must be met when dealing with buildings that meet historical preservation standards, like the Dunes State Park Pavilion. Dunes Action and PIER sent letters to the National Advisory Council on Historic Preservation and the Indiana Historic Preservation State Officer, hoping they will call for a Section 106 review. Helmer says the Dunes Action letters asks the Advisory Council for Historic Preservation to stop the modifications to the Dunes State Park Pavilion. Controversy over additional plans for further development and renovations to pavilion, including a banquet hall and a conference center, garnered over 10,000 signatures against the proposed redevelopment. Dinnerstein says she has concerns about the pavilion's redevelopment.
There is this proposal to renovate the old historic pavilion there and build a new conference and wedding center next to it. And the reason that the National Park Service is involved in this is that this park, which is a state park, has gotten grants from the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which is a federal program to support outdoor recreation in state parks.
Dinnerstein says the grants obtained to develop the project went through the Federal Land and Water Conservation Fund, which requires certain environmental preservation measures to be in place in order to proceed with development.
Once you get a grant from that program, and this park has gotten several grants from that program, you are required to keep that park and that land for outdoor recreation purposes. You can't just turn it into a hotel or something that does not serve the outdoor recreating public. Unless they purchase equivalent land that has equivalent value for outdoor recreation somewhere else to replace the land that is converted out of outdoor recreation.
PIER and Dune Action say these environmental protections are not being met. Both groups are asking for the project to be halted or for the DNR to designate additional recreational land elsewhere.
We have been asking all along for the National Park Service to intervene and say you cannot do this unless you go through this, what they call conversion process, where when you're developing something that is not directed at the outdoor recreating public, and you have to buy replacement land or not do it.
Both PIER and Dunes Action agree that the pavilion needs to be renovated, but fail to see eye to eye with the Department of Natural Resources. According to Helmer, Dunes Action wants the pavilion renovated in a manner consistent to the preservation of the historical structure.
As a matter of fact, Dan Bortner of the Indiana DNR has said that the DNR wants to bring it back to its original condition, and we are fully in favor of that, both of the exterior and the interior. It's a beautiful building, and it can once again serve the public. Sadly, the Indiana DNR has neglected this building, and it needs to get itself in gear to do this project properly.
Helmer says Dune Action did not have problems with the proposed uses of the pavilion, but says physical additions could alter the building's footprint. Helmer says the proposed expansions to the Dune State Park Pavilion could amount to a potential violation to the National Historic Preservation Act. Dinnerstein says the renovations and expansion could change the character of the pavilion.
The renovation of the old pavilion is adding what they call a fine dining restaurant and a rooftop bar. And there's, also this proposal for this adjoining whole new conference center. And these are really not intended to serve the outdoor recreating public that's come to, hike and go to the beach and so forth. They're intended to make money for the private developer that is doing this under a lease with the state park.
Both Dunes Action and PIER say the 90-year-old pavilion is technically eligible for the National Register for Historic Places unless the proposed changes to the footprint of the structure is approved. According to Dinnerstein, the DNR is putting in a bar, additional balconies, a dining terrace, and an elevator up to the roof, which, she says, would disrupt an old observation area for the public. In a press release, Dunes Action states, quote, "The National Park admitted it had not seen any documentation about planned uses for the pavilion, but appears to have given its sign-off for the pavilion reconstruction," unquote. Dinnerstein says the renovations would turn the pavilion into a commercial facility that will preclude the function that it used to serve.
At one public meeting a couple of years ago, John Davis, deputy director of the Indiana DNR, literally said, when he was asked why there was no public input prior to there being a lease between the DNR and the developer, what John said was, if we had opened this up to the public, we never would have gotten to where we want to be.
Dinnerstein says Pier received a letter from the Advisory Council on Historical Preservation that the council is going along with the DNR and the Historic Preservation Law does not apply to the pavilion. According to the complaint filed by Pier, quote, the National Park Service admitted in its August 9th letter to Pier that Section 106 will be triggered when the proposal for the second phase of this project, an adjoining conference/banquet center, proceeds, unquote. Helmer says the public is only now learning about the Dunes Pavilion plans because the plans were never released to the public. He says he only knows about the plans from a public records request.
This information was provided to the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, and we believe that they have reached an incorrect decision based on incomplete and false information.
Helmer says the DNR did not ask for public input for fear of public backlash over the leasing of the pavilion to private operators in a historic building in an ecologically sensitive area. He says the law requires public input and that the DNR has so far failed to meet those requirements.
The Park Service informed us that they are taking the position that this new conference center will require the conversion, but they gave the go-ahead to work on the old pavilion. They said this is not a conversion. We don't have to give any further approvals for this to go forward. And so we wrote a complaint to the Advisory Commission on Historic Preservation and said that they have failed to do what is required under Historic Preservation Law, which is to consult with the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation.
Helmer says in a letter sent to Dunes Action stated that the National Advisory Council on Historic Preservation spoke with the DNR officials and were told that the project, quote, would not alter the character-defining elements significant to this historic pavilion with the exception of replacement windows and an entry canopy, unquote. Helmer believes the Council on Historic Preservation has been lied to and provided incomplete information since the DNR made no mention of plans to expand the building. He believes proposed alterations would change the building significantly and that the response from the Council on Historic Preservation has been unsatisfactory. Dunes Action and Pier plan on resubmitting their complaints. Renovations to the pavilion continue. With WFHB, I'm Alex Davis.
And that story is available online at WFHB.com.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet voice and TV service. Now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at SmithvilleSecurity.com.
Coming up next, WFHB's weekly community resources segment, Everyday People.
Don't mess around. I got eyes all over town.
Welcome to Everyday People, improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County.
Everyday resources for everyday people. Connecting our community by sharing resources you need, want, and probably don't know about.
Hey, Stacy, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you, Courtney?
I'm well.
Great.
I want to talk a little bit about Caregiver University.
Yay.
We've certainly featured this on the show before, but because it's an ongoing program,
yeah,
want to give a reminder that on October 20th, from 10 a.m. to noon, there's a free presentation at the Monroe County Public Library about hands-on skills for the family caregiver. And that is being given by Barbara Haley, who is a registered nurse at IU Health Bloomington Hospital. If you're someone who's giving care and you need some extra information about how to do so better and how to watch your own physical health when, you know, helping the care recipient, this would be a great class for you.
And actually, not just for those actually taking care of someone, but for someone in the future. If you think you might be in this situation really at any point in your life, I highly recommend it. I think it's super important to find those things out there that will make us a better caregiver, mm-hmm. be proactive, and get out there and get these under your belt, so to speak. So I think it would be great for people even just possibly considering being a caregiver.
Right. That's actually a really good point from a job standpoint, if it's something you're looking at doing for work or a career. And I want to throw out a reminder, caregiving can be for elderly people, it can mm-hmm. be for people of any age who might have a disability that requires a lot of hands-on mm-hmm. care.
A lot of caregivers that we see, and when I say caregivers, it could be professional or
family,
family. But we have a lot of older women that are caring for their husbands mm-hmm. or vice versa, and these tips could just be invaluable. And it could be the deal breaker whether they get to stay home or have
Absolutely.
To go somewhere else. So things like this are super important.
It's been a nice, a good thing to be involved in.
It's great. And so there's another one coming up in November, is that right?
That's correct. On November 15th from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock, again, all these classes are at the Monroe County Public Library. Dana Thompson, who's the Alzheimer's Resource Service Educator with IU Health Bloomington, will be giving a talk on enhancing communication within the family.
Which, if any of us have a family, then you know communication can sometimes be...
It can get a little wonky, and it needs enhancement.
Yes, so I feel like this one is just as important as the
Absolutely.
Hands-on, because you can't be a caregiver if you can't communicate, so...
Right, and you brought up a good point. I feel like with Dana's background and her skills and knowledge, this will likely relate to communication as it relates to Alzheimer's and various degrees of dementia. And so that brings an extra layer of needed communication and ways to do that will work for the person who has Alzheimer's as well as those who are providing that care.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, what may work one day may not work the other. And Dana is absolutely wonderful, and she can help guide you through the navigation of communicating
mm-hmm.
and give you some really great tips. So I think this will be another really great caregiver university.
I think so too. And again, like you said, any family.
Right.
Even if you're giving care for someone who does not have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's mm-hmm. or dementia, caregiving does take a toll physically, emotionally, financially.
Absolutely.
So having the best possible communication within all parts of the family and all the providers who you might be accessing to get said care in place has to really be at the forefront of these efforts.
No, it really truly is a teamwork approach. You know, I've had family members, they just don't understand what dementia can do to someone.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand why grandma can't remember you just told them Bailey's going to the softball
mm-hmm.
game. And but can remember a fact from 1920. And it can, you know, all of it's frustrating. And if
certainly. And disappointing and sad. And this certainly tends to break down communication if we start taking things like this personally.
Right.
It's a good reminder to take a step back and remind ourselves of why we need this good communication.
Thanks for joining us on Everyday People.
Tune in next week for more information and resources that connect everyday people to everyday resources. For WFHB, I'm Courtney Stewart.
And I'm Stacey Goffinet.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Jonah Chester. Our feature was produced by Alex Davis.
Everyday People is produced by Courtney Stewart and Stacey Goffinet. Our engineer is Megan Wade. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Aaron Wagermiller.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming, online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news at wfhb.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Interchange, Bloomington Community Radio's longest-running public affairs program, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.